The one for the arts graduates went on over something like 5 or 6 months.
Oh.
I'm going by memory now. But it was done on a decentralised basis, where a young lady called Sue Cardus was at that time one of our training gurus, and specifically on the software side in our TSG main development laboratory. And she put this together with outside consultants who ran a lot of the courses. She ran a lot of the courses herself, and did an excellent job in it. But it was a bit difficult to say when the training finished, in that once they reached a certain point, they continued their training on the job.
Working, yes.
And it does take quite a long time to become particularly expert on languages such as Post Office Coral, which is the main language used on System X development work. And it's,
well, that's a specific
it's a,
language.
It's a specific language. It's quite
else.
A sophisticated language. And it takes a fair time to become proficient in it.
Do you get men and women applying?
Oh yes.
In these areas?
Oh yes, yes.
To what extent? I mean, in what kind of proportions? Given that the training is obviously, I mean, the kind of numbers that go into university departments in those areas would be far more men than women.
I think I'm not particularly well qualified to talk about the proportion of women that are applying and being recruited on a direct entry basis,
yes.
because the personnel department at Stoke
does
deal with that,
yes,
and
yes.
They're in better contact with the day-to-day figures. But if we look at our graduate trainees, for example, the 20 that we are due to take on the 1st of September, then I'd say probably about a third of those are women. You tend to find that the predominance of women is amongst the non-technical and non-scientific area, of course, but not exclusively by any means.
But then they get the same training scheme. So,
oh, yes.
So they
oh.
shift. I mean, they have to learn
That's
more
right.
technical skills.
I mean, they go
skills.
Through our 6-week workshop course the same as anyone else. Now, if you're asking about proportion of women at other levels, then if you want me to describe those, then craft apprenticeships. We took on our first girl craft apprentice.
Did you?
A year ago, and she's doing very well.
How craft apprentices? Now that's for draftsmen.
No,
jobs,
going
or?
Into areas like the tool room, electricians, and model making. Machine tool fitting and so on.
And how many apprentices do you have per year? In
well,
that?
She was one out of 17. I'd say the first that we had ever recruited.
Yes, I think I saw something about that in the paper, probably. Yeah.
If we look at electronic technicians, we managed to recruit something like maybe 10%, roughly, of girls into electronic technician apprenticeships.
Now those are for what jobs?
They go into areas like factory test and development laboratories and into installation work. Now that proportion, as girl intakes go, is probably high. And I think we achieved that 10%, even though it's pitifully low, it's still high relative
yes.
to the other training schemes, because we make specific efforts to establish contacts with local girls' schools. And for example, one of my 6 senior training officers is, I think, vice chairman or something like that of the Board of Governors of Ling Hall School. And it's through establishing those sorts of contacts and by going in and talking in the schools, that we have managed to have a rather higher proportion of girls in the electronic technician apprenticeships. We find that girls form about 50% of the business or accounting technician apprenticeships, but that is more to be expected.
Yes. What kind of apprenticeships are they?
They lead into accountancy and into purchasing.
And how long are they?
Both the electronic and the business technician apprenticeships are 4 years long.
And the craft apprentices?
That's 4 years as well.
So they're all 4 years long. And they're all, do they all involve day release, or do they involve internal training?
Or? Yes, either day release or block release, whichever suits the college and ourselves better. Generally speaking, the craft apprentices do day release. The craft and business technicians do day release, and the electronic technicians do block release.
And that's all with Henley Parnish?
No, with various technical colleges. A lot with Coventry Technical College, Tile Hill, Henley.
You use the whole lot of them, really?
That's right.
Yes. Taking a lot of work in their direction, I should think.
Absolutely. The major amount is probably with Coventry Technical College, because they are the major experts on electrical electronic courses in the city, but we don't use them exclusively, even for electrical electronic courses.
And do they develop courses of a kind that you want? I mean, does the kind of partnership work in that way?
Yes, the philosophy of the TEC courses, that I refer to before, the Technician Education Council.
And that's what all of those would come under, is it?
Most of them. A number of the craft apprentices are still doing some of the old City and Guilds schemes. But predominantly they are doing, these other apprentices, Technician Education Council, TEC. And those are designed on a modular basis, which allows for locally designed but nationally approved modules, so that the telecoms industry as a whole, in fact, gets together. Hello. About 10 o'clock, we have a brew up.
Right.
And when you hear the bell later, it's just Pavlovian, because that means everyone has a slaver and go and pick up their cuppers.
Oh, I see.
But for visitors and such like, it is brought here.
Oh, I see, yes.
So, yes, the TEC course is designed in such a way that the telecoms industry can get together and have specialised telecommunications modules. Put together.
And does that mean that the local, I mean, you can have specific modules put together that would be different from Plessy's, or?
Yes, if necessary.
Yes.
Most of the modules are identical and approved by Plessy and STC as well as ourselves, and joint working parties together from the industry and with the colleges have devised them.
Yes.
But there are ones that we want that are particular to our needs.
And they're taking the place of City and Guilds, presumably, are they? They sound much more flexible and adaptable.
The trouble with City and Guilds is that all courses are determined nationally.
Yes.
Now, the post office nationally have far more apprentices than any of the manufacturers alone.
Yes.
And the post office still has something like 80 to 90% of its exchange network of the old electromechanical variety.
Yes.
So they still want a predominant input on the electromechanicals. Well, to us, that is largely old hat, and it's the last thing we want to be having any emphasis on.
Yes.
So with the City and Guilds, we were always very frustrated because we couldn't get enough super new electronics in. But now with TEC, we simply swamp the post office in terms of the number of apprentices at the local technical college. So the thing is reversed in a way.
Yes.
But it means that we very much prefer the TEC, although there are academics who believe that there are things that TEC lacks that City and Guilds used to have from an academic rigorousness point of view. I'm not sure that's quite right. I'm not sure there is such a word as rigorousness, but from the point of view of the rigour of the academic control, they feel that City and Guilds had it and TEC doesn't. The TEC is designed on a phase test basis together with a final exam.
Yes.
But it means that whereas with City and Guilds, if we recruited 48 apprentices in a year, we could expect perhaps to kick out 10 apprentices at the end of the year when they failed their exams badly, and we felt that we just had to boot them out the door, which was always rather sad. But with Technician Education Council, we get early warning that there are problems,
yes.
and we therefore can react, and the college can react, and we get a very low failure rate.
What would a failure rate be?
No more than one or two a year out of a course of 30 or 40.
It's part of shifts in all kinds of other areas of education that I'm familiar with, really,
right.
and the arguments about O-levels and A-levels being outmoded, and whether one has N and F levels,
I suppose
the shift from, the development of CSE was part of at a certain point, part of an attempt to develop a more flexible...
That's right. I think the only problem with the educational system is that it's quite a jungle, and I think that in trying to be flexible as a nation, we tend to confuse, because, for example, looking in the UCA handbook, just at universities, forgetting the polytechnics, a couple of years ago I worked out that if you wanted to read electronics at a university in the UK, then at the 44 universities were something over 120 different ways of reading electronics, or 120 different courses in which you can read electronics, including things like medical electronics and so on. And the whole thing is so complex that very often it's a disservice to people, because they can't take advantage of the menu because they've got indigestion simply looking at the menu.
To expect a school leaver who probably hasn't done electronics to select from that whole array is ludicrous, isn't
it? I think this is a problem with A-levels and MMFs and CSEs and all these other things. I go along with the concepts behind them, but until the educationists can sort out the package in such a way that the lay people can actually understand what it is they're offering, I have my doubts as to whether it's the right way to go.
No, it's not at all standardised, certainly.
That's right.
And
certainly, what picking that up, I think it's a pity that the NNF proposals weren't picked up, because we, of course, provide a much narrower education in this country than our competitors in France, Germany, and so on. And one of the problems we do find with our engineers is that they are not as lucid and not as well able to express themselves as we would like.
That's interesting. So you'd like to see a broader education to
I think it's a great pity that Finiston didn't pick that up. And I think it was one of the key failures in what's otherwise an excellent analysis of the problem of engineering in this country. But in most of our competitor countries, you can read engineering after you've specialised in classics, let's say, but you still have enough maths there to switch into engineering. And even if you do classics,
you have to make decisions
still
at 14,
have enough basis of mathematics as you go through your degree to be able to talk to the engineers, and that doesn't happen in this country. At the age of 16, you have this dreadful specialisation, which is
earlier to some extent with O-levels.
We talk about
but then drastically at 16.
That's right. Number of girls that apply to us at 16, many of them we have to exclude right at the application stage because they've done biology instead of physics.
Yes, absolutely.
And that decision is, of course, made at the age of 13 or so. Hello.
Probably by somebody else. research. It does make it easier because there's a sense in which one can follow things up without kind of drastically trying to scribble things down all the time. No, I agree with you about NNF. I mean, I would have liked to see.
I'm not quite sure
get through as well.
Why NNFs were thrown out by the educationists, because it seemed to me to be an essential way to go.
No, I mean, the only discussion I had of it was at the level of our department, at which we did indeed support it, but I'm not sure what happened to it. I suspect that some other revamped form of something similar in the end will come about, because there will be pressure to have a more flexible system further on.
Probably the cost is such that for a country that hasn't got much cash to spare, one has to cut one's cloth to sue.
But if it's not cut to suit, then, if it's not cut to suit anyway...
If it's not cut to suit, we'll probably go bust anyway, just a bit quicker than if we did, and we might then still be around. But the interesting thing is that, as Finison points out, if you look back 150 years, people were saying about British engineering what they're saying now. Nothing much has changed, it's just that we don't seem to be able to get beyond the stage of talking about the problems.
Yes. Oh, well, education is, educationalists are phenomenally, certainly in universities, both ivory tower and not very good at thinking about innovation, really. further combination means that there's a real resistance to responding to
and in engineering those kinds of changes. The pity is that it's educationists who tend to dominate the professional engineering institutions. And for example, they put predominant emphasis on technical ability and precious little emphasis on managerial or organisational ability. And I think that's something to be regretted as well.
Yes, and certainly if you do an engineering course, I mean, at a university, you wouldn't do any organisational managerial work at all.
You tend to do a little bit. That is increasingly coming about.
Mm.
But it's not so much that worries me, because I think a little bit, but not too much, of management theory input on a degree course is useful. But you probably know a lot more about learning theory and so on than I do, but you know, all the evidence seems to be that it's no good having a theory if you can't go away and apply it fairly immediately, and you can't go away and apply managerial theory when you're an undergraduate.
Mm.
So a lot of the managerial theory is perhaps better left until an individual is in a position of responsibility and can then use it fairly fast. But what is a great pity is that so many of the academics in engineering have got relatively little recent practical experience at the front end in engineering. And that again is something that is different from, say, Germany.
Yes. Oh, very, yes. Mm. And different from the States too.
That's right.
Mm. Which I'm more familiar with, in fact.
And you know, in Japan, for example, pretty well all research, I'm told, in engineering is funded by industry.
Yes.
Which is different from what happens here.
Yes, very much so. Is that all the kinds of apprentices you have? You've talked about craft apprentices.
Yeah, shall I quickly go through the whole range again? Make sure we haven't left anything.
Electronic.
At the age of 16, we take on... Shall I give you numbers as well?
Yes.
To give you an idea of the sort of balance. This year, we are intending to take on something like 10 craft apprentices.
Mm-hmm.
32 electronic technician apprentices.
Mm-hmm.
8 mechanical technician apprentices.
Now, have we covered what mechanical technicians do?
I don't think we have. Sure, no, they will go into areas like production control, industrial engineering, work study.
Mm. Right.
And again, it's a four-year apprenticeship, like
they're all
the previous
years.
Ones.
Yes.
We also intend to take on 8 business technicians to go into areas like accountancy and purchasing and buying. Not sure what the difference is between purchasing and buying. Just some people internally use one and others use the other, but I think it's much the same.
Yes.
A dozen drafts, dangerous to use the term draftsman, but in this context that would be criminal, wouldn't it? So draftsman stroke women. Again, a four-year... No, sorry, that's... That's essentially an accelerated apprenticeship we put them through, a two-year apprenticeship.
Mm-hmm.
So those are all the 16-year-olds.
Yes, right.
Right, now we go to the 18-year-olds, and of those who pass their A-level successfully, we are hoping to recruit something like 48131. Students. 131 referring to the package.
Yes.
24 thin sandwich students. The 131s used to be called thick sandwich, but people felt that being called a thick student wasn't very flattering, so 131 tends
right.
to be,
yeah.
That's right, it's okay if you're thin. And those together add up to those that we recruit who predominantly are coming out with good A-levels in maths and physics,
yes.
But one or two of them in other subjects who will train for accountancy. But predominantly they are sponsored on electrical, electronic or computer science courses up and down the country.
Unpaid by you?
Sponsored by ourselves, yes.
Yes.
Now, for those who who take A-level Maths and Physics, or OND Technology, which I consider to be more or less synonymous with A-level Maths and Physics, who study those for 2 years, but mess them up, the trouble is that the word failure is used, and it upsets people, including... as long as they don't publicly quote me, Sir Arnold Weinstock, or Lord Weinstock now.
Not wanting it to be thought that he takes on failed 18-year-olds.
That's right. When a magazine called Engineering Today ran an article on these people I'm going to describe just now.
People in your firm.
That's right. Yeah. And this was about 18 months ago, and they referred to it on the front page as how GEC succeeds by recruiting failures. This did not go down very well. At Stanhope Gate in Sir Arnold's office.
Right.
But I think that quite a genuine way to look at it, when we both look at it, is that people who get O or F grades at A level have not failed. They are simply reaching an academic limit. And they are still potentially very useful people if their education and training continue, bearing in mind what their academic limitations are. And we take on 56 such people and put them through this 3-year sandwich scheme, which leads to a higher technician diploma in electronics and telecommunications, which they follow at Coventry Technical College. And the HTD is roughly equivalent to the old HND, but there is a lot of argument about that. TEC say it's the same as HTD, and academics say, rubbish, it's not as good as HND. We're not too concerned about the academic arguments, it's what's best for GEC telecoms.
And it works for you.
we're using it.
Right.
So 56 of those, and then on a trial basis this year for the first time, we are trying to recruit people at the bottom end of these people who get O or F grades at A level in maths and physics. And we're trying to recruit 15 people who have got strong practical abilities, hopefully predominantly in electronics. And they will follow a 6-month scheme based at Coventry Technical College and end up using very sophisticated test equipment at Raglan Street, sorting out the bugs on the printed circuit boards that are produced by our private systems division.
And that requires really practical abilities and sticking with it. And
that's right. The practical nous to be able to sense what it is that's wrong with a circuit. The £100,000 worth of test equipment that's the size of these two desks together with VDUs and all sorts of fancy gear will tell them whether it's right or wrong. And if it's wrong, it will tell it roughly what's wrong and roughly where it's wrong.
And that
but they
them
still
into...
have to go into that area and sort out just precisely what is the problem.
Yes.
Those are the 18-year-old people that we take on. And the final category of any significance are the people who have got their degrees, and of the 150 or so direct entry graduates recruited each year into Coventry, we offer graduate training over 2 years to 20. And because the graduate training scheme leads into a number of non-technical areas, if you can describe areas like production control, for example, as non-technical, we don't have to insist that they have technical degrees, but we have to see the career objectives of the individual and the personality of the individual as likely to fit them into the sort of areas where we know there are likely to be vacancies.
Yeah, so that's very much, how do you, you use tests and things to select them, do you?
No, we use interviews and rely on our judgment on that basis.
And are these, you've cited numbers for this year, are these very much fluctuating or very much shifting, or is this pretty much your what you've done over the last 5 years and what you will do over the next five years?
We had a pretty mammoth increase between the numbers taken in 1978 and the numbers taken on in 1979. And the increase of the order of that we went for something like 130 were recruited in 1978 in total.
That's of graduates?
No, of all those categories I've described.
My goodness.
And in 1979 that went up to 220 or thereabouts, against a target of 235, but we fell a bit short on our students. Now, with certain jumblings of numbers within that, we're going for about the 200-220 level again this year.
But it will, it, from what you said at the very beginning, it's likely to increase by...
Well, the point is, you see, that if the total number of apprentices under training, by apprentices,
apprentices just means
graduate trainees and so on. So,
so really,
I'm using the term in a very loose way. I like to use the word trainee equally well, just as long as you don't sort of confuse it with, say, operators who are training.
So it has nothing to do with kind of old conceptions of apprenticeship.
Well, it has in a way, in that Coventry is one of the cities that has maintained, or rather after the war resurrected, the concept of registering apprenticeships with the Freedmen's Guild and being admitted to be freemen of the city of Coventry.
And you, all these people would be registered in that way?
Yes.
Oh, I see.
The 16-year-olds. Anyway.
Yes.
Interesting enough, actually, one of my senior training officers is Master of the Freeman's Guild this year.
Yeah.
But certainly there is that tradition there, and I think that many parents, as well as their kids, value the fact that they get an apprenticeship in the old-fashioned sense. But you can't really consider student the 18-year-olds as apprentices in the same terms, because they don't qualify for the freedom of the city in the same way, and they are termed on our recruitment literatures trainees instead. But you still around the country will find student apprentices as the generic term for these people.
Yes.
So it depends what you feel most comfortable with using.
Yeah,
I'll be consistent and start using the same term all the time. But within all those categories, the number taken on is remaining at the 220 level, but when you compare it with the 100 to 130 that we were recruiting at 3, 4, 5 years ago, then the net increase is such that you find that the total apprentice or trainee population increases, such that a year ago we had 420 apprentices, we now have 550, we will have 650 in 2 months' time.
This is within their 4 years?
Yeah, you see, the new intake clocks in about August, September, October time of the year. So the net increase sort of clocks up by 100 or so at that time of the year.
So you said it would be 650?
That's right. It's now 550, but give us another couple of months and it will go up to 650. And that will then go up to 750 a year later.
So you're really, it's not that your intake is increasing massively over the 79 figures, it's the accumulated effect of the 79 figures.
The present level of increased intake.
Yes.
And then I think after the 750 it ought to go to about 800, and the year after it goes to 850.
But that's what we call in the university the roll-on effect.
That's right.
Yes.
Right.
You know.
So on earth we'll find training places for all that lot, I don't know.
I was going to say, yes, you're going to keep...
550 this summer, we've already got 3 students downstairs, and we couldn't find anything else to do, so they're actually doing useful projects in the department. It's a mammoth problem.
Over the summer? Mm. Yes, indeed. And are all your training schemes in these apprenticeship technical subjects, they're all for 16, 18-year-olds? I mean, they're all basically school or college leavers?
Yes.
You haven't moved in any way towards recruiting at any older levels, or...?
No.
You haven't been forced to? And they're all full-time?
It's an interesting question. For example, the Manpower Services Commission is quite interested in this scheme that we are going to provide for these 15 people who fail their A-levels but who do this 6-month course, which takes them into testing electronic equipment. But the Manpower Services Commission have a requirement that you must have left school at least 2 years ago and been unemployed for so many months before you can be considered. And one of the things that we're always wary about is that it's so easy once you stop the academic path, or once you stop being a full-time student or full-time pupil, to get very rusty in terms of your ability to pick up information. And we also tend to have a lot of applications for most of these apprenticeships. We obviously